earlier on at migration information, quality of data, what we know about the migrants now present in London, or elements of that. We're now going to look at the role and impacts of migration, beginning with Max Nathan, who's going to talk about the wider economic impacts. But then Christine Whitehead-Scanlon from LSE will look at is housing the main cost of migration and the evidence thereof, and then the wider impacts on local services from Pamela Meadows from the National Institute of Economic and Social Research. But Max Nathan, colleague from LSE, is going to start us off.
Thanks, Tony. I should say that I'm LSE and NISA.
I'm sorry about that.
Because I have a number of NISA colleagues here. So let me tell you what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to try and keep this to about 10 minutes and cover four things. I want to just rehearse a bit of the demographic context that we heard in the first part of the session and try to pull some things out of it which I think are particularly germane to what I want to talk about next. I also want to sort of set out three areas where you might look for wider economic impacts of migration. And by wider economic impacts, I'm largely talking about beyond the labour market, so it's beyond some of the stuff that Ian was talking about earlier. I'll then try and show you what evidence we have, and we don't have very much, either in London or outside it, but I do think we have some sort of a suggestion of the direction of the effects here. And then try and pull out some of the emerging messages. And these are very much about where further research ought to go, as well as what policymakers might need to start thinking about. So, firstly, a bit of national context. When economists talk about modelling the economic effects of migration, they typically talk about a single migration shock. So it's a sort of static analysis where a load of people arrive for some reason and some stuff happens and then that's it. And actually, if you look at the UK trend, then the pink line here is net migration, and the darker line here is natural change. So these are the two sort of big components of overall population change. You can see that this single shock model doesn't really work very well. So, you know, this is a sort of, I mean, the shape of this curve is a sort of long cycle or long wave up. And you can see, and this sort of relates back to some of John's graphs, that it dips down as the UK heads into recession, but it's now starting to sort of shift back up again. So three things about this. I mean, it's not a single shock, it's multiple shocks. Some of the people who are arriving in this pink line are going to stay, going to settle, they're going to start families, so this is also starting to affect the slope of the blue line as well. Obviously, migration is shifting both the size of the population and its composition as well, and this touches on some of the sort of diversity issues that I want to come into later. And also, I mean, this is UK-wide, but if you map this over the UK, you would find that this is heavily urbanised. So some of the rates of change in rural areas are very high, but the stocks are biggest in urban areas, particularly in London. So I thought this is a nice way of illustrating how some of those things play out on the ground. So this is from a paper by Susie Hall, who's at LSE Cities, and what she did was to go up and down the Woolworth Road. I've drawn the Woolworth Road on using MS Paint, that's the red line at the top there, and she basically looked at the birth country or sort of cultural ethnic origin of the people running the shops along the road, and then mapped this back to sort of home countries or countries of origin. And so you can see just on one street, on High Street in South London, this extraordinary sort of diversity and cosmopolitanism. So, you know, London is going to sort of encapsulate a lot of these dynamic impacts on migration that I've been talking about. So that's some demographic context. Now, if we think about some of the economic context, I think there are three reasons why we might want to look beyond labour market impacts when we're thinking about the economics of migration. And the first is, endogenous growth theory tells us that human capital and ideas and sort of movement of knowledge is important to long-run growth. Because access to knowledge and to flows of knowledge are imperfect in the real world, people who are mobile and groups who can help generate and diffuse ideas around may be important to enabling some of those long-term growth processes. Secondly, And again, this sort of touches on some of John's points about the way that work is organised internationally and economic activity is organised across national borders. You know, these processes of globalisation make coordinating and managing work pretty difficult and pretty complex. And technology helps do some of that, but not all of it. So again, you know, people who can help those processes of coordination, and I'm thinking in particular of people who are internationally mobile and also diasporic groups, potentially have important roles to play here. The third point is that we know that cities have important economic externalities as well. They help to enhance labour productivity. They have large consumer markets. So we might expect some of these channels to be amplified or at least bigger in urban areas. So a lot of the research that I'll be whisking you through builds on some of these basic intuitions. Okay? So, three places we might look. I said I wouldn't talk much about labour markets, but I think some of the sort of dynamic effects of these, you know, sort of repeated shocks are worth talking about very briefly. There are a number of sort of production side channels which I want to touch on quickly, and some consumption side channels, one of which is housing, which I'm going to leave for Christine and Kath to talk about. So two takeaways here are that there, you know, there are clearly multiple channels by which migration and the diversity that migration brings might affect economic outcomes at a number of different levels. So there's an individual level, firm level, sort of group and area level things, and we need researchers are starting to try and pull some of these apart, although we're very much at the beginning of this process. So on labour markets, I mean, this is really touching on a lot of the stuff that Ian was saying. I would just say that you know, although there are disputes about what some of these national studies are actually finding and that the way that they've been done, we have some, you know, London evidence from qualitative stuff that Kavita and others have done, and also the paper that Ian's done with Yanis that we talked about, certainly some suggestive evidence of, you know, a clear migrant division of labour in London, and some suggestive evidence of downwards wage pressure at the same time that net migration is happening. And there's obviously a debate about how those things interact. I mean, from work I've done, this is very much a story about the way that sort of employers with a lot of entry-level jobs, labour market sort of deregulation and temporary employment agencies are coming together, as much as it is a story about migration numbers going up and down, possibly more so. So let me talk about some of these production channels in a bit more detail. Firstly, just spend a little bit of time thinking about the entrepreneurship channel. So there are a number of things that might be going on here. So sort of the migration decision might sort of pre-select particularly skilled or ambitious or driven people. This is a sort of something that a number of people have studied in the migration literature. More broadly, you might imagine there's this sort of notion of middleman minorities or transnational entrepreneurs, people who are working between a number of different markets and can leverage knowledge of all of those things. Entrepreneurship may be sort of a proactive and also a reactive thing. It may be a reaction to lockout from mainstream economic institutions. Some work that I've done with Neil Lee suggests that migrant firm founders in London are more likely to be proactive. The reasons that they found their companies are much more about spotting the opportunities and developing new markets than as a reaction to sort of exclusion from other bits of economic activity. The qualitative research here picks up a number of barriers and challenges to those people growing and taking their firms to scale. And they also point out that there are a number of other factors shaping both the entrepreneurial behaviour and entrepreneurial outcomes, as well as migrant status and ethnicity. So there's lots of other stuff in the mix here, and I think that's important to take away. We know a little bit more about sort of the innovation channel, and the intuition here is that it's the diversity that migration brings that's doing quite a lot of the work. So people like Scott Page make this argument that having a wider mix of skills, perspectives, views in an organisation is going to help you generate ideas and help you problem solve. And there is now some, you know, evidence from lab studies and increasingly from studies of real-world firms that those benefits are coming through. Conversely, you know, you might see, at least in the short run, that diverse teams have sort of lower trust or find it's a more difficult to gel. What the empirical research is saying, what is suggesting, is that if those negative effects are there, they tend to sort of dissipate over time. So there's a net benefit. And again, the work that Neil and I did with London firms suggests that these sort of net benefits are coming out as well. So firms with more diverse top teams and firms with more diverse workforces were slightly more likely to innovate, both in terms of product and process innovation. What we found, which kind of surprised us a bit, is that these effects seem to be operating across the whole of the economy. So a lot of these other studies tend to find it's mainly about some knowledge economy firms. We found it was going on, you know, in both knowledge intensive and less knowledge intensive sectors. A third sort of area of interest, I think, is about market access, and here the intuition is that it's actually sameness rather than diversity that's doing the work. So the argument is that co-ethnic group membership has network benefits, essentially. The idea is that information flows more easily, trust levels higher, and you know, this could, from a sort of economic point of view, this can help domestic firms access new markets and organise activity across borders in a more straightforward way. And again, you know, there are a number of studies, particularly from the US, finding that this is going on. A lot of them look at patent data and look at ethnic inventors and the way that patent citations reveal knowledge flows. They suggest that some of these co-ethnicity effects are operating. There are also some studies looking at ethnic networks in multinational firms, which suggest that multinational firms' activities are also helped by these co-ethnicity effects. Neil and I tried to see what we could do with the London data, which wasn't as rich as we wanted, but we did find some differences in sales orientation between sort of migrant-headed and minority ethnic group-headed firms in London, which suggests that some of this stuff may be going on. Again, you know, the qualitative research, which is going in at a kind of richer level than we can with the numbers, suggests that, you know, there are going to be specific networks and specific network structures that are more effective than others. So we need to, you know, try and be more fine-grained in our work here. Final bit, and then I'll finish, is thinking about the consumption side. So, you know, net migration may raise the level of demand for non-tradable goods in the city. It may also shape the product and service mix. And Ian and Christine and others have done some work looking at the potential for sort of hybridization of goods and services as a result of a more cosmopolitan population. If some of these goods are inelastically supplied, like housing, that might increase sort of competition and the prices of some of those goods. Now, this is the area where I think the empirical evidence base is the thinnest. It's fairly thin across all of these, but we know very little about this. There is some sort of quantitative and case study evidence suggesting that net migration is related to increased product mix. So there's this Californian study by Mazzolari and David Newmark, which is now out in JPE, and there are some, you know, there's some good qualitative and case study work in the UK done by Mondo and Ram and others. An alternative channel here is that minority ethnic enterprises are just going into the sectors where the entry barriers are lowest, and that's certainly what some of the London qualitative studies have found. So we need to do more work, again, I think, to try and disentangle which of these channels are operating. So, three sets of messages that I think come out of all of this. The first is just about framing what's going on. What I hope I've convinced you is that you know, the economic impacts of migration are going to go well beyond the labour market. We need to think about these production and consumption side channels. We also need to think not just about the kind of the absolute number of migrants who are sort of coming in and coming out, but also about the composition and about the structure of the composition of the migrant population and how that's working with the with existing populations in cities like London in particular. Secondly, sort of about theory and evidence. The theory is inconclusive about what all of this, what all of these demographic shifts are actually going to do. The evidence that we've got suggests that these are largely small but net positive effects of migration and the diversity that migration brings. But there are big evidence gaps here, particularly on the consumption side, but also on some of these other channels. And we certainly don't know enough about what's going on in London as we'd like. The third set of messages are about policy. I mean, we've talked about some of the labour market stuff already. I think, you know, what evidence we have suggests that elements of re-regulation and active labour market policy are important aspects of any response here. On this sort of broader, wider impact stuff, I mean, I think all we can do at the moment is think about focal points for future policy attention rather than specific prescriptions. But they certainly include some of these wider roles of high-skilled migrants, diasporic networks and diasporic links, and business support for migrants and ethnic entrepreneurs. And that's it. Thanks.